Hey, it's Steph Dixon, and welcome to the Live Wide Awake podcast. Thank you for being one of our listeners in 88 countries around the world. Today, we're speaking with Peggy Chen, WFPB chef, restaurateur, social entrepreneur, systems educator, and executive director at Zero Footprint Asia. Previously, she ran the most successful plant-based restaurant in Hong Kong called Grassroots Pantry, and she's on a mission now to scale traceable, regenerative, and circular food systems in Asia. Over the years, Peggy has emerged as one of the region's most authoritative voices on organic sourcing, systems, thinking design. She is also an alum of the Global Shapers Hong Kong, which is the World Economic Forum, an active member of the Chef Manifesto's SDG2 Advocacy Hub, a two-time TEDx speaker, and a Hong Kong Environmental Excellence Awardee in the service sector. In this episode, we talk about the industrialization of food systems, transitioning to regenerative and circular systems, the importance of education, and so much more. Okay, it's time to live wide awake. Peggy, thank you so much for joining us on the Live Wide Awake podcast today. I know this is your first interview after being a new mum, so that's super exciting. But yeah, I'd love to start a little bit about how you were first activated into the sustainable food space. So maybe you can share a little bit about your journey.
All right. Really great to be here. Thanks, Steph. I would say it activated before the word sustainability was even, you know, became common. Personally, I started to consume more plant-based foods, vegetarian, whole, vegan, whatever you want to call it, in my early 20s, almost late teens, mainly because of health reasons. And from there on, I was able to treat a lot of my depression that I had when I was a teenager through just changing my lifestyle, changing my diet, and consuming more whole foods. So after that, there were more and more articles and the internet came about. So we were able to research a lot more information on the meat industry in particular, and also genetically modified organisms. And that was, I think, around 2005 and 2007. That's when I realized that, you know, after having gone to chef school, after having been working in the industry already, there's actually a lot that I don't know, how corporate companies are controlling our seeds in the world, how corporations are exploiting our land, exploiting people who grow our food. And there was just so much that I didn't know that I felt for someone who needs justice in the world. It just really hit me right there. So I started to read a lot about food systems and sustainable agriculture back in 2007 while I was still working in corporate hotels. And then to the point of, okay, I'm done working in corporations and I want to venture off and start something small. That's when I opened Grassroots Pantry in 2012. Yeah, so that was my plant-based restaurant. The whole idea of it was really to educate and get people talking about why whole foods, why local organic, why support smallholder farmers and build food systems within our local network. Yeah, and then also to demonstrate how creative, innovative, and delicious plant-based foods can be. And so that's kind of where it all started in a way.
Yeah. And I mean, I remember the very first time I went to Hong Kong, so many people told me that I had to go to Grassroots Pantry. And I remember I went, it was always a highlight of my trip. Every time I went to Hong Kong, I always went in a restaurant because the food was delicious, also very innovative. And I got to have some of my old favorite foods when I was a meat eater, but eat them in a plant-based way. So you really were, you know, pioneering on the front. And so, yeah, I'd love to unpack a little bit about what you were saying about sort of the systemic issues. And, you know, maybe you could paint a bit of a picture about what they are. And when we're talking about the industrial food system, how can we even start to sort of understand the real problems that are there? If you could share a little bit more on that.
Yeah. I mean, it's a huge beast to even tackle just, you know, with an hour. I don't think we can touch on all of the major issues, but I'll try. First and foremost, the industrial food system and how we currently consume and produce food is based on a very linear system. So it's a take, make, waste model where we have no connection to how food is grown and how food is disposed of towards the end of the life cycle. And therefore, without communicating between the producers as well as the consumers, we end up wasting a lot of land, water, wasting a lot of human power, money, and resources. And towards the end of that system, we just throw it away. And so in a way, we need to retract from that and start thinking more of a circular as well as regenerative, which would really be the end goal. How do we restore and enrich the land that we are taking from? So that's one of the major issues. It's a mindset shift that we need to move away from linear all the way to regenerative. Currently, four crops provide 60% of the world's calories. So how we have centralized food, seeds, and grew the same in, you know, types of crops all over the world and stripped indigenous seeds from being grown and from being owned and saved for the next year. That's also a big issue. And also four big corporations own the rights to over 2/3 of our world seeds. So again, this centralization of food being controlled by mega corporations is one of the key issues, and how we have been able to strip the farmers' sovereignty away from them to control what they should be growing as well as what's seasonal is one of the major causes to why climate change and deforestation and natural resources being depleted. These are the reasons why it's occurring at such a rate. It's because we have stripped that control of local warriors, local farmers, to protect our land. So these are just some of the main issues, but also just the education part. I mean, I'm sure during my mother's generation, they had, you know, home ec at school, and they would teach children how to make their own food or cook their own food or sew their own, you know, buttons on a shirt. And over the years, we've again stopped educating children on the basics of cooking, growing food, understanding seasonality and health. So I think that is one of another issue to food system, because then you're stripping away young people's knowledge of where food comes from. And they end up thinking that food is really just packaged in plastic wrap, taken from the shelf of a supermarket. And that disconnection is what exacerbates a lot of the issues with planetary health as well as human health. So I'll just stop right there. There's a lot to unpack, yeah.
Yeah, no, thank you. I think there's, you know, you did well to cover all of that in one answer. And I think there's a few things that I'd love to unpack further. So one, you know, obviously there's a lot of people to feed on this planet, and you talked about wanting to move to more regenerative and circular system, but really, like, we have to divorce the food systems from things like deforestation and fossil fuels. How can we even start to begin to do that, since it's so ingrained? And as you said, there are these four mega companies, and there's sort of like four centralized foods that are grown as well. So maybe you can even share what those four centralized foods are. I wanted to ask that. But yeah, just also in general, how can we begin to divorce from these two major issues?
We've been talking about how do we feed the world as if it is an issue. First of all, we actually have more than enough food to feed the world. I don't remember how many times. I think it's like 3 times or 4 times, but don't quote me on that. But at the same time, 1/3 of people in the world are malnourished or starving, you know. So it's not that we don't have enough food to feed the world. It's that we don't distribute that food to the right people using the right logistics to the right hands. And so let's talk about, like, we're capable of feeding the world. Let's remember that first. Now, your other question was, how do we divorce ourselves from deforestation and fossil fuels? Of course, that's the David versus Goliath question, and also an opportunity, I'd say. We talked about the centralization of seeds and centralization of how food is grown. Well, we can decentralize, you know, if we put together the right people power to decentralize. So what I mean by really saying that is, how do we bring back that education of indigenous knowledge to grow food directly back to the people, to cook food directly back to the people? It's obviously an astronomical ask to rid ourselves from the grid, the current grid, but what are the main reasons for why we can't rid of the grid? Because politics, policies, and these mega corporations are embedded with each other, right? And subsidies that are currently designed across the world, which is one of the biggest issues. And I will come back to this every single time after having been in the food consumption side of the industry for 20 years. I realize that no matter how much we try to change people's behaviors and consumption, at the end of the day, it's about how food is produced and what kind of subsidies are being designed to support that system, right? The current subsidies are supporting the industrialized food systems. That's why the junk food is cheap, right? That's why food that is traded halfway around the world, that's boxed and packaged with tons of waste, is more accessible and more available to people because those are subsidized. And therefore, how do we change the design of subsidies? Why can we not subsidize the better organic form of growing food? Why can we not subsidize farmers to grow food without chemicals, right? So I think that when we talk about sustainability, the next stage of it is really to reimagine how collective action and how design can actually change the way the current trajectory is going, and how do we reimagine the food system for the future.
You know, absolutely. So I guess on this sort of reimagination trajectory, do you think that we can actually sort of like eat our way out of the climate crisis? And if so, like, how do we kind of think about doing that? Because at the end of the day, I think what we're talking about here is to have a more sustainable and equitable way to produce food as well. Do you think that's possible?
Yes, I definitely think that based on the terminology of how do we eat our way out of the climate crisis, at the moment, what we're asking people to in society is, if you are conscious, you know, if you're a conscious buyer, you're a conscious eater, you might have the choice of buying the better option, right? Out of a broken food system. You might have that choice. You might have to pay a bit more for it, but you at the same time, you can afford it. But the problem is that a lot of people in the world don't have that luxury to pay more for the better option, right? So what we're trying to do with Zero Footprint, and if we're going to get into that now, is to provide an option to people, to chefs, to restaurants, in order to change the way food is grown. Because that is ultimately the biggest issue when it comes to fossil fuels, when it comes to carbon emissions across the entire food value chain, from farm stage all the way to transportation to waste. The biggest bulk of emissions occur at the beginning of the food value chain, which is the farm stage, what happens on the farm, land use change, what kind of chemicals are being used, what kind of machineries are being used. Actually, up to 80% of those emissions of any ingredient occurs at the farm stage. But we focus so much on the consumption side of fixing people's consumption behavior, going more plant-based, which I completely agree. We should be eating much less meat. We're focusing so much on packaging waste and even designing circular products. To me, I think, do we really need more stuff? You know, do we really need more alternative solutions, especially if those alternative solutions aren't affordable, you know, and alternative meats at the same time? Like, do we really think that that's going to convince a meat eater to change their diet? And what is the reason for the product or the design of alternative meats? I would think that it's to get rid of animal factory farming. I think that would be a game changer if we can replace, you know, animal factory farming with some form of alternative meats just to appease, you know, the meat eaters. And yeah, we're focusing a lot on circular means of designing new products, but at the same time, there's actually existing solutions in place.
What I'm kind of taking away here is that we need to change the focus away from consumption, away from packaging, and really focus it at the farm level, because we can have the biggest impact there. So maybe you can also explain a little bit more about how we do that and sort of what you're doing with Zero Footprints Asia to kind of solve the problems from the root up, which I read and I quite liked that line.
Yeah. Having been, you know, on the consumer end of the food system, being in the service side of the food system for this long, and so trying to change people's behaviors by serving them the better option, you know, the more organic option, sourcing over 95% of our inventory from organic sources. That means we're paying way more for the good stuff, right? We realized back in 2018, 2019, that the impact that we were creating really weren't changing the system whatsoever. You know, I think we were doing great with advocacy and raising awareness, but when it comes to changing acres, practices on acres of land, we really were not really moving the needle there at all. And therefore, what needs to happen really is getting money into changing practices on acres. And what I mean by that, you know, organic certification have been around for what, 50, 60 years. But did you actually know that less than 2% of land globally are actually certified organic? And there's a lot of reasons for why that is, because maybe some farmers are already planting organically, you know, but they just don't have the means of paying for a certification, right? But at the same time, if it's less than 2%, does it really show that actually the system is flawed? The whole thing about subsidies, shouldn't farmers that are actually practicing better be subsidized, you know, to put that money on the ground and pay and be able to produce food in organic ways, in much cleaner ways, with less chemicals, less fossil fuel, less, you know, damage to land. So that was kind of like a wow moment for me when I realized that just from me purchasing organic, it's not really creating more acres of organic land. You know, we're not helping the next farmers practice organically. So when we started partnering with Zero Footprint in 2018, we were pledging towards helping farms in California, because the program is headquartered in California. It was started in California. We were partnering with them and pledging to bring money or send money over to help regenerate. Like right back then, it was like ranches, big ranches, or a lot of the monocrop wheat farms transitioning into more regenerative, or I don't even think they called it regenerative back then, but just more biodiverse, I'd say, more diverse farms. Now, since we closed the restaurant, we started the consultancy, but at the same time, I'm sure you've watched it, Kiss the Ground on Netflix happened. And that kind of was another wow moment for me, where I realized that as a chef, there's only so much I can do, but in my advocacy for getting people to recognize what happens on the ground, I think I can do more there. And so we touched base with the Zero Footprint guys again and decided that we would branch out into Zero Footprint Asia and get started there. So technically what we mean by changing acres on land, even organic certifications have its flaws because it's very highly dependent on kind of like a checkbox exercise. So are you putting the organic fertilizer on your land? Are you using the organic pesticides? You know, and there's only organic compost and everything has to be certified. And so that kind of refrains farmers, especially indigenous farmers, from practicing in ways that feels more natural to them, you know, and utilizing more indigenous knowledge to grow food.
So I think maybe you could share a little bit about how you actually work on the ground with the farmers.
We brought Zero Footprint Asia, or we kickstarted Zero Footprint Asia. And the whole idea is really to, first and foremost, we're not the technical side of the expertise. You know, we're not the people on the ground training farmers. I don't have that expertise whatsoever. But what we do with our program is that we work with hospitality and food service businesses to pledge the subsidy, to pledge a 1% that gets stored in the Restore Fund as a grant. We open up that grant once a year to farmers who want to make that transition happen, transition away from what they're doing currently. And some of them are heavily tied to the chemical fertilizers, maybe even the organic fertilizers. Like in Hong Kong, we have chicken manure fertilizers that are flown in from Netherlands, you know. And so what is the, sure, it's organic, but there's also that emission involved when you're shipping and flying in chicken manure just to grow your crops locally, right? So we basically get those funds to the hands of our experts, the conservation experts, to build capacity for farmers to then uptake this knowledge of whether it's, you know, whatever, it's contextual, obviously, but whatever the farmer requires, like pest control, how do you create ferments and natural nutrient amendments to help your plants grow better naturally, and then also how to create, you know, natural pesticides, creating compost, covering your soil, ensuring kind of principles like letting your living roots stay in the soil in order to grow microbiology, allowing for fungus to grow as well, and also no-tilling. So some of these practices that are under the regenerative agriculture technical side that these farmers are getting knowledge with. Materials like compost and mulch is just simply not available, and not at least good quality. Compost and mulch are just not available, and therefore it's also very time consuming for farmers to create their own compost. And so how do you get those resources to these farmers who want to make the transition? So it's, yeah, every grant is open for a 12-year period, or so, sorry, 12-month period. So throughout that time, the conservation experts, the soil regenerative experts, and ourselves monitor that process and also evaluate and report those processes as well. So yeah, our focus is really on educating, advocacy, and marketing, in a way, communicating the results back to the restaurants, and also to get this knowledge out to more people.
Mm. And how have you found the sentiment or, you know, response from the restaurants? Like, are they quite keen to sort of like bring this in and add that 1% to the bill and to sort of adopt this? Or have you found that it's been a little bit difficult?
Yes and no. Yes, because we've had pretty good results just from the from 2 years of operating. We have 16 projects, 11 of which is already completed, and then another 5 or 6 are currently happening. So we've got these projects on the ground. We've got funds raised from these restaurants. So it's been received well. However, as you can imagine, the language around regenerative agriculture, or even just agriculture in general, is very difficult for people to understand. And then on top of that, that climate literacy bit is even more difficult. You know, getting a journalist to talk about it, to write about it, it's hard. So I'd say the challenges are, first and foremost, we're not just educating people on just the pledge and understanding the why we're doing it, you know, and what the money is for. I think most chefs and most restaurateurs are still stuck on, oh, we're pledging money to support farmers in growing more organic food, you know. So that's kind of the extent of where the conversation currently is, and not in changing acres of land, building more soil microbiology, creating more resiliency with climate impacts in the near future, improving farmers' livelihoods. We're not at that stage of conversation yet. So I think that's the difficulty.
Yeah, I think the education and communication is such a battle. And I think, yeah, at least you're got that first step. At least they sort of, you know, are part of the conversation. They're willing to support and get involved. But I think that next piece is, yeah, that's the challenge, right? It's like helping people to understand simply, because people are time poor. They, you know, they just want to know what the solutions are. And yeah, I think that's a really difficult job for sure. But I'd like to, you know, deep dive a little bit more into the soil microbiology, because I think one of the things you also talk about is how if we have healthy soil, then we have healthy guts. So if you could also just explain that a little bit more, because I think at the end of the day, people do deeply connect to their health, especially as they age or they have aging parents. I think then all of a sudden health becomes much more front and centered in like the latter part of people's lives, and more so also now with energy and nutrition and these types of things. That is a piece that I think people get and they're willing to change behaviors for, maybe sometimes more than the climate piece, right?
I think as a chef, we tend to think vegetables are good, it's healthy, and, you know, maybe too much fat is bad. And that's kind of the way to judge how food, whether food is good or not. But the way that we grow a certain crop, the methods that we grow a certain crop also changes its nutritional value altogether. So I think it was the BioNutrient Association that's done a research on carrots, and they found that, you know, it would require one to consume 70 conventional carrots in order to get the same amount of antioxidant of one, I don't think they use the word regenerative, but one biodiversely grown carrot. So it's a 70 to 1 ratio. And that has a lot to do with the environment that this carrot is grown in. Know what's feeding it, what kind of nutrients are being exchanged, what kind of microbes are being funneled within the soil. And we think that if we have pests or if we have insects around the plant, is it going to eat up the nutrients of our crops? And if we grow different types of crops next to each other, is it going to like strip each other of its nutrients? But nature doesn't work that way. It actually works together. It helps each other. And so I think that's beautiful. One of the very exciting things when I first started to visit regenerative farms in Hong Kong, which you might find it's crazy to even, you know, hear about regenerative farms in Hong Kong. And now even in Singapore, I know there's a couple of organizations working on soil health as well. But some of the things that they were doing was very intrinsically very similar to what I was doing as a chef. So culturing nut pulps and fermenting it. And, you know, we do that for making cheeses or like making kombucha. You know, let's say we're using peels, fruit peels to ferment fruit peels, like to make tepache, you know, like pineapples to make tepache. And therefore you are increasing gut microbes, some kind of, just by fermenting food, you're actually increasing the microbiology of that food and therefore helping with your gut flora. And you can actually do the same on soil, do the same on the farm by fermenting nut pulps and creating kind of nut pulp ferments or fish hydrolysis. So using fish guts and like bones and heads and then adding EM to it, so like a microbe to it, allowing it to ferment. And even making compost is a fermentation process. That, adding it to the soil, you're actually increasing the good microbiology, the gut microbiology that is required for our health to be balanced, for our immune system to actually activate, right? So it's the same thing. As much as our gut requires good microbes, soil also requires good microbes. And I think that's very exciting because as a chef, you're really seeing that relatability here.
That is just so fascinating. And just, I loved how you also talked about how nature doesn't compete, but works together in these sort of soil or regenerative situations with, you know, biodiverse crops and everything. And it's just like a really beautiful image, but also just makes so much sense. And that, yeah, if we have healthier soil, then we have better food. And that's obviously giving us a lot more nutrition. And that stat of like the 70 to 1 with the carrots is crazy. So I think this is such an important conversation, and hopefully, you know, we can see more shifts towards this. And I guess I'm always just curious because industrial farming, it is industrial, right? It is designed in a way to just have a lot of food and a high quantity, but very low quality. But if we were to, you know, slowly but surely convert all of the farms in the world to be regenerative, are we going to, I mean, I guess an thing that maybe some people think about is like, is there going to be enough food? Can we still feed everyone like with those kind of practices? And is it more slow farming? Like, what are some of the things that, yeah, I guess these sort of bigger questions about it?
I would say that what it would do is then bring back food into more localities and allow for more people to work within those local structures, local communities. So I don't see just regenerative farming happening. It could be urban farming. It could be, you know, indoor farming at the same time, community gardens, all of that working together. Yes, the conversion of lots of acres, lots of hectares into regeneratively grown farms, as well as integrating agroforestry into it, has to happen in order to get that kind of amount of food out, right? But we're already seeing companies like Nestle and Danone, all of them having a regenerative model for some of their commodity crops, right? Such as wheat, such as soy, such as even dairy, a lot of it going into that way. How do we produce dairy with cows that are actually grazed in ways that are holistically managed, right? So companies are already coming on board to embrace regenerative agriculture techniques because they know that within 5 to 10 years, they're very likely not going to have land to even grow food on because of the immediate concerns that we see with climate impacts, right? So I think it's a combination of thinking globally, how do we feed the world? Yes, we need to convert these massive acres, but at the same time, how do we empower people locally to adopt farming, like even, you know, weekend farming or hobbyists, you know, weekend hobby farming and growing our own food as a part of, you know, food resiliency as well.
You know, I think it's really important. I guess that really circles back to what you kind of mentioned at the beginning as well, that we are very disconnected from our food. And one way to get reconnected is to grow, whether that's, you know, in your home or on the weekend, as you just said, and just really learn what it takes to actually grow food. And I think when we do that, we just have such a deeper appreciation for the process, for how that food's like got to our plates, where it's come from, understanding the provenance or caring more about it, and just realizing how precious the food is that we have. Because I think a lot of people are disconnected and they don't think about it. So how do you think that we can live wide awake?
I'd say ask questions. Always be inquisitive and ask questions and challenge the status quo, you know, do your research and stay awake in that way.
Yeah, I think that's a great, great suggestion. Let's ask more questions. Be more inquisitive and curious. Well, Peggy, thank you so much for joining us and sharing all of your fantastic knowledge here. And yeah, it's incredible the work you're doing with Zero Footprints. And yeah, we'll continue to support you and yeah, follow the journey.
Great. Thank you.
Three things I'm taking away from this conversation with Peggy. Firstly, we have enough food. We just need to distribute it properly. Secondly, changing the design of subsidies is essential to support organic and sustainable farming practices and make them more accessible and affordable. And thirdly, transitioning to regenerative and circular systems is crucial for us to address the systemic issues in the food system and restore the health of the planet and communities. I'm curious, what did you think about the episode and what were your main takeaways? Is there a topic you want me to dive deeper into? I'd love to hear from you. You can find me at Steph L. Dixon or at Live Wide Awake. If you got something out of the podcast and you want to continue this journey with us, consider subscribing and supporting. I hope that today's conversation stirred something deep within you, ready to awaken. And until next time, live wide awake.